This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Well, we've never drafted for need around here. I mean, we're never going to. So we're going to pick the best player that we feel fits our program, regardless of the position. I'd say other than a quarterback, I mean, I'd say pretty much any position is on the table. So like it always is. So try to stay true to our board. That's the reason we grade the players. So we put the players on the board. We grade them accordingly. We value them accordingly relative to what we think the role is going to be. And then we take them off the board as we see fit. So, I mean, that's not going to change.
All right, that was Nick Caserio in his pre-draft press conference talking about we will not draft for need. And as we dig into the 9-person draft class that they drafted over the weekend, the Houston Texans, I think we can look at it and say, by and large, he was pretty true to that, Seth. If you had told me coming out of the weekend that they would have 9 players drafted and one of them would be an offensive lineman, I would have said, I'll take the over on the one offensive lineman.
Okay, but then what would you say to the fact that the first 3 picks were taken, were the identified positions of need?
I agree with that part.
Wide receiver and offensive line.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was going. I think there's some middle ground here. Like, I don't think these purely draft based on their board. I do think, it would be an awfully strange coincidence that it went wide receiver, O-lineman, wide receiver. I think if there's a big gap in what their grade is on, say, the next offensive lineman versus where they are and they can't move up or down or whatever, then,
I think the biggest thing, and honestly, GMs, when they're asked, do you draft for need, it's like admitting that they wear what's that thing? A corset or something.
Yeah.
You know, like a male corset or a toupee. Like, they desperately don't want to give it up. I think with the Texans, it's always felt to me like they're not going to compromise their draft board. But it does seem like in this draft, they may have moved around a little bit to get guys at that position.
Yeah.
So they're not going to draft a guy above where he is on their draft board just because it's a position of need. But, I mean, they traded up for... They traded up to take an offensive lineman in the second round.
Yep.
They traded back out of the first round when all of the guards were gone that might be first rounders in their eyes. So I think that it's a factor and it's an element. They just don't want to compromise their draft board.
Yep.
So I'm cool with that. I think that's a smart way to go about it.
Yes.
You want to fill needs, but you don't want to overpay or overspend your own evaluations to do it.
Yeah. And I think probably the further you get down the board, the more it becomes best player available, probably, you know, because you're not drafting game changers theoretically at that point, you know.
Right. And that's where, when it comes to Graham Mertz trading up to get a quarterback, my longstanding philosophy is always be drafting quarterbacks.
Whatever year, yep.
ABD QB.
Yep.
I've got it tattooed on my inner thigh.
Weirdest tattoo.
In case
ever.
I ever become a GM.
Yep.
So always be drafting quarterbacks, especially when, Davis Mills is in his contract year, which, you think, no big deal, whatever. At any given point this season, there's going to be a team that's desperate for a quarterback because of injury.
Yeah.
And Davis Mills, through being exposed to multiple different schemes, including a Shanahan scheme, which is widespread throughout the league, he might become a valuable commodity at some point. So you always want to be developing somebody up underneath him to either replace or become future trade.
Well, and I think, too, like, they're going to start to get to an area. I think they may already be in it, but it's going to get even tighter when they have to pay C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. Like, you're Davis Mills is going to make more than $5 million. Davis Mills doesn't play a snap this year, someone's going to pay him more than $5 million a year next year just based to be a backup, not to be their starter. But to be a backup, if he doesn't get traded, like you just said, in that scenario, grooming a young quarterback who you feel like can be your backup and then paying him 6th round money for 3 or 4 years, those are some of the things that you're going to need to hit on here as you start to head into very, very tight salary cap era, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things that on the margin of it, do you want to be playing $5 to $10 million for a guy that doesn't bring a boatload to your team?
Yes.
When you have somebody else that's on a rookie contract?
That's right.
That's where you are with that. So I'm cool with that. And it hits, a lot of the stuff that happens in the back end of the draft is all, like, you're looking at the, I don't want to say they're expendable picks, but it's the difference between an undrafted rookie free agent and a late round draft pick in terms of probability of making the team and everything else that goes like that. You're just, you've got more leeway to make some, this is kind of, it's like buying a lottery ticket or scratch off.
These are scratch offs.
Maybe a more winnable scratch off.
Yeah, six and sevens are scratch offs, no question. So I think the biggest question, I think there's two big questions coming out of this class. Did they, the big one is, and this is one I can sense people are feeling, did they do enough on the offensive line? We'll hear from Nick Caserio on that. Let's do that here. I'll get to the second question in just a little bit. But this is Nick Caserio being asked about not landing a guard in this draft class.
Yeah, well, look at what the opportunities are. I mean, again, offensive linemen come in different sizes. You have guards only, you have center only, you have tackle only, you have tackles that can play guard, guard that can play tackle. So, I mean, like, honestly, like, the more you can prove, like we talked about, like, Titus never played guard before. So, and we didn't know how good he was going to be until he went in there. And honestly, he played at a pretty competitive level. So, I mean, there's no, like, list that says we need to go find a guard like we talked about last night. I mean, if someone can tell me, like, what a need is or what drafting for need or what finding a specific player. I mean, if you play one spot, you better be really good at it. If you play multiple spots, it creates more opportunities for you. And we'll put the five best guys out there, like, whenever we need to play in September.
The issue I have with offensive linemen who are versatile is that usually the best examples of them are guys who are already really, really awesome at their position.
Yeah.
So in Houston, hey, Bruce Matthews could play center, guard, or tackle. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. Hey, Larry Allen played both tackle and guard. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. Hey, Joe Tooney went out and played left tackle. Right. Well, he's a perennial Pro Bowler. He's not on the same caliber as Bruce Matthews. First and foremost, I just want a guy who can play his given position really well.
Yeah.
The versatility is a benefit you get from drafting a guy who's an awesome offensive tackle.
Yep.
When you try to take a guy who hasn't even proven himself as an offensive lineman and move him into different spots, it becomes a whole lot dicier. So I don't like looking at Ursary as a guard. I think they might try him there and it could work out. I'm just a little bit skeptical because of the way his size and lack of knee bend. I'm a little bit skeptical that he'd be a good guard. If that's what they choose to go with him, I'm not going to be as excited about it as him playing tackle.
For what it's worth, John Harris, as soon as they drafted Ursary, or the day after, not as soon as they drafted him because I wasn't on, but I was on with Johnny on Saturday for the Texans draft coverage, and on the spot he had Ursary as right guard in his first permutation of the week one that he could, you know, because he had, and he's got Titus at left guard. So he's got Robinson and Fisher as his two tackles, and then, you know, one of either Scruggs or Patterson at center.
Yeah.
So we'll
see.
Yeah,
and like I said, I'm not saying that it can't happen or that it won't happen. I just, I feel like, man, Ursary's a tackle.
Yeah.
And but we'll see. I'm very willing to be surprised.
What Johnny brought up too was Laramie Tunsil started out as a guard in Miami because they wanted to get him on the field, and then he's their left tackle after that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's
Laramie Tunsil, like the difference in athleticism between Tunsil and Ursary, or at least I guess fluidity.
Yeah.
Like overall athleticism,
yep,
I think is pretty vast.
Pretty drastic. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the selection of Ariante Ursary.
Yeah, Tay, you know, with Tay, we had a guy who brings, you know, that physicality, the mindset that I really think helps offensive linemen be good at their job. He's done a great job of playing left tackle and still has room to grow and develop. So excited about adding him.
All right, so there you go. The mentality is the first thing that gets brought up there in Ursary.
There was a theme with a lot of guys. You know, like Jalen Noel was a 2-year captain.
Yeah.
You know, go all the way down to multiple guys here were captains and played for 3 years and just mark off a whole lot of football character elements.
Yep.
Ursary, I found I found a podcast where Urser is interviewed before the draft, and it was funny because it almost sounded exactly like D'Amico. It was the podcaster was asking Ursary about how they've been able to produce so many good offensive linemen at the University of Minnesota. Yeah. And the O-line coach there, Brian Callahan, not the NFL Brian Callahan, Ursary talked about how Brian Callahan really, really stresses just loving football. Mm-hmm. Guys that really, really love football, and you got to be all about that, not just the NIL stuff and everything. So it sounded like D'Amico.
Yeah, yeah. Let's flip to the second big question, because we're going to do Acknowledge Me at 7:20 on the show today. And this is good, because that I think that first question, we get to know Ursary a little bit better here. Did they get enough, did they address the weapons for CJ thing enough? I think those, Seth, felt like the two biggest needs going into the draft was they need offensive line help. We all know that. They know that. And then, hey, look, right now it's Nico Collins and Christian Kirk. And then after that, it's a bunch of guys who couldn't get open last year on a regular basis in that wide receiver room. They draft Jaden Higgins with a 34th overall pick out of Iowa State, sort of a Nico Collins clone, at least in terms of his traits. And then Jalen Noel, Higgins' teammate from Iowa State, in the third round. He's more of a shifty Kirk Tank Dell type. Steve Smith Sr. Of the NFL Network, former wide receiver in the NFL, said that he thought, when he was asked which quarterback got the most help through day two of the draft, so after days one and two, which quarterback got the most help? He said C.J. Stroud.
It has to be the Houston Texans with C.J. Stroud, just because you get two wide receivers who are familiar with each other, former teammates, but then they also bring something different to the table, right? Jalen Knowles, he's a guy that really just kind of works in the slot. He can give you some outside presence. But however, Jaden Higgins, he can go up top. He's a big guy who can seek his hips, a vertical threat, has a vertical gear, but also does some things differently. So you have different types of guys. And then obviously they, with the acquiring of Christian Kirk, that also helps him as well, because he's a guy who's going to teach these guys some savviness. And then you got Nico Collins, who's developing into this fantastic wide receiver. And then they all are waiting for Tank Dell whenever he comes along. But these two guys really help him with a second-round pick and a third-round pick.
All right, we should add that they then, on the next day, traded back into the fourth round to draft Woody Marks out of USC, who's a third-down back, who John Harris really liked him as well when he got picked. The two wide receivers, Seth, though, that Steve Smith's talking about there, Higgins and Noel, how do you feel that the Texans did addressing getting weapons for C.J. Stroud?
Well, I think that after the Jaden Higgins pick, I think there were a lot of people that liked the pick, like Jaden Higgins, but you almost just have a little bit of a replication of Nico Collins' skill set, classic X-receiver type, a big guy goes out on the outside, and Higgins can play on the All these guys play all over the field anymore. But, you know, he's an outside type wide receiver. He can play in the slot, but he's an outside guy. Physiologically. People were saying, all right, where's the speed? People wanted Luther Burden, because Luther Burden is just a more electrically athletic type of dude. They go and they get Jalen Noel. Jalen Noel is that guy. So when it comes to the quick game and threatening underneath, which the Texans were woefully underdeveloped doing last year, especially after Stephon Diggs went out, I like everything Steve Smith laid out there, especially the mentoring aspect, that playing slot is as much mental as it is physical. Mm-hmm. And for rookies, you go into a situation where you got to be able to read coverages both pre and post snap way more than they might have asked you to do it in college. So having a veteran in Christian Kirk helps that. And then there's, if you look at the way that it's structured, there's some redundancy now too. If Nico misses a couple games because of injuries, you still have that Nico Collins type guy out there in Jaden Higgins.
Yeah, man.
If Christian Kirk gets injured, you still have that underneath speed in Jalen Noel. So, I like the way it's built like that.
I was joking on the draft show that it's almost like they're drafting a Broadway play. They went and got understudies for the two leads. Today, Nico Collins is unable to perform today. The role of Nico Collins will be played by Jaden Higgins. Like, okay. I was actually, you know, I've watched both these guys. I haven't watched a ton of Iowa State, but they've been a team worth watching the last couple of years. They've been good. I'll tell you, just like the 90 seconds that they play of each guy after they get drafted, I got more excited by Knowles' sizzle reel than I did Higgins' sizzle reel.
Right, right, which is any guys with speed,
yeah.
Extreme speed.
And his hands, he is not a body catcher. Like, for a little guy, man, like, he had nice little catch rate.
He goes out and plucks it out of
yeah,
the air.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hopefully, C.J. Stroud can form a relationship with him.
Yes.
The Iowa State, having three wide receivers from Iowa State is interesting, and Nick, a couple times this weekend, gushed about Matt Campbell, the coach at Iowa State, yeah. And the program that they have. When they drafted Ariante Ursary, they gushed about the way those guys are coached up at Minnesota.
PJ Fleck is their coach, yeah.
Yeah, and then they take the Keontae Hamilton, the defensive tackle, out of Rutgers, and Nick gushes about Greg Schiano and the way he prepares guys.
Yeah.
I just found it notable that the Texans drafted two guys out of USC, and there was nary
of Lincoln Riley.
Of Lincoln Riley or the coaching at USC or anything else like that.
Lincoln Riley brings an edge to these guys, stuff you never hear.
He can recruit the hell out of some good
– Yes.
Including an NIL,
because
Woody Marks was a transfer.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, no, they like it because, especially on the defensive side, maybe it depresses the draft stock of those guys a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if Kalen Bullock actually played for some dog out at USC, you'd had to use a first-round pick on him. Like, we can get him in the third because their defense gives up 45 a game. Nobody's picking guys off that defense. You're right.
Jalen Smith, the cornerback out of USC, who it sounds like Kalen Bullock was at Jalen Smith's draft party.
Yeah.
So they're buds. I'm sure I'm guessing they might have asked Kalen Bullock at some point about him.
Definitely.
But if you talk about being skeptical, if you're skeptical of the Jalen Smith pick, the cornerback out of USC, mm-hmm. That's the one position especially where I'll go back and say, man, Nick's done a pretty damn good job drafting defensive backs, and the Texans coaches have done a damn good job coaching up these young cornerbacks. So I'm going to defer to that.
Yes.
On that position, I'm not just trying to tap out of this one. He's done a really good job at that position.
Yep. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the two Iowa State wide receivers, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel.
Both guys, Jaden and Jalen, I mean, terrific men. First and foremost, and you got two different guys, right? You talk about playmaking ability, Jalen's ability to stretch the field and the deep end of the part of the field, and you have Jaden, just a big target, very similar. I know a lot of people say very similar to Nico and what he's able to do, but you get a receiver his stature and with his catch radius, just opens up a lot of things for us offensively. I know, you know, all of our guys are excited about, CJ should be excited about, you know, the targets that he has to throw to.
All right, so there you go. I was excited about getting those two guys for sure from Iowa State. Text messages coming in on Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, and we'll circle over to acknowledge me in a bit. We'll get to the draft class in its entirety later in the show. There's a lot to dig into. Text message: did you all see Todd McShay had Noel as his second rated receiver and Higgins as his fourth? I didn't see that. I did see McShay, and we've got this audio. Ben, do we still have the McShay on Ursary up there? Is that gettable? McShay also said this about Ariante Ursary.
In 2029, when we look back, Ariante Ursary will be one of the top three offensive tackles in this class and maybe the best or second best offensive tackle from this group. Here's the thing with Ursary, man. On tape, I'm looking at a 6'6", 331-pounder who ran a 5.01 40. And I already mm-hmm. told you that size with that speed, what it means. Big guys that move like this don't fail. Very rarely. Orlando Browns, Dan Fa'alele, Amarius Mims, Cincinnati, Trent Brown, 6'7", 355, seventh round pick, been in the league 100 years. This guy moves well, and he's a big, big dude, man. He surprised me on tape because he's quick and he his knee bend. I think he has the potential to develop into an elite pass blocker.
Nice. Okay, that was weird there at the end because he does not have great knee bend. So I'm thinking he's wondering if he can develop his knee bend. He has the chance to develop because there's no way he was watching him on film and thought that he has great knee bend. That's a knock against him. But I do think that's why there were varying opinions on him, is because he does move really well. It just doesn't look aesthetically pleasing because he's kind of stiff-legged and top-heavy. But he moves really, really well. And that's where I think if you just separate what your expectations are for a guy who's athletic from what you actually see on the film, he's getting from point A to point B very quickly. In the zone blocking, the stuff where you think of the guys who move like Laremy Tunsil, who has great body positioning and great knee bend, he doesn't look like that. but he gets the job done, and he is massive. So that's where I'm willing to I think that Caserio might feel differently about Ursary than some other scouts, just because Caserio might be able to overlook that knee bend. One of the guys that's done really well with poor knee bend is Trent Brown in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And Caserio brought Trent Brown in. He's on the team right now.
Yep.
And that's where I get excited about it. I think he looks a little atypical from what you're looking for in your prototype offensive tackle. But big guys like that who can move well, they can get away with playing upright. Mm-hmm. There's defensive tackles who are like that. John Henderson was like that. He did not play low, but he was such a massive bear of a human being that it didn't matter.
Yep.
So it's the guys who can play more upright but have the mass to get away with it. Kind of like Andre the Giant going against that guy in The Princess Bride.
I remember.
You haven't seen The Princess Bride.
Bits and pieces of it. Yes. Yeah.
I know. So Andre the Giant is going against a much more athletic and spry, whatever the guy's name was with the mask. And, he's whooping up on him pretty good.
Yeah.
He ended up losing that bout. But still, you can be as stiff-legged as Andre the Giant as long as you're that massive.
Ursary graded out real well on that relative athletic score dealio that they've got. Like, he's one of the, like, he's like in the top, like, 3% all time of tackles they've graded on that.
And this is where I'm struggling to say it exactly, because usually you say, well, hey, try to ignore the measurables and just look at how he plays on film. The measurables tell you that he's very athletic. You go and watch the film, and I think some people watch it and think, wow, look at that on zone runs. Mm-hmm. He actually wheels his hips around really well. He's gaining a lot of ground out in open space. He's getting guys blocked. But as he's doing it, he's kind of like that two wooden-legged guy on the Family Guy. Yeah. He's doing it really fast. Is it Sheamus? Sheamus is running around on those on those peg legs, and he's getting it done.
Yeah.
So I think some guys look at it, and with their eyeballs, they don't see in their mind's eye of what a good athlete on the offensive line looks like. I see a guy that's just moving around and getting it done.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, let's get to acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances from over the weekend. This is really an opportunity for us to get a few other draft nuggets out there that we haven't been able to touch on. We've been Texans heavy, somewhat Shadur heavy. Some of you still weighing in on the Shadur thing just make me laugh. Like, oh, yeah, and both of y'all hating on Shadur every morning leading up to the draft. It turns out we were right. Like, anything we were bringing up about Shadur had to do with what people were saying and what we saw with our own eyes and heard with our own ears as to what he was saying. The league has spoken. If you feel that way about us, then the other 31 teams, and even the Browns to a degree, they waited till the fifth round to take him. They were all hating on Shadur as well because they were not using anything to have him arrive at that spot that we weren't talking about on this show. We never said he was a bad kid. We said he was handling his business in a horrible way, and that was proven to be true. The war is over, okay? Like, you could text in all you want about you're hating and all this information coming out and they're conspiring against Shadur. The war is over. Shadur lost.
All that information, most of those reports were already out before the draft.
Correct.
It's just people wanted to ignore them.
Yes.
It was that they wanted to believe that they weren't true.
Funny how the meeting info on Shadur didn't come out until the draft. Yeah. It was out in March. There were anonymous executives talking about
this. It was out in March. The other dumb takes that are coming out about this are people citing college stats you're exposing yourself there as somebody that just really doesn't pay attention to sports much at all.
Right.
They'll compare Eli's stats from the year 2000 to Shadur's stats.
Yeah.
Or just inciting college stats at all, which I guess I forgot. Timmy Chang must have been one of the most insulted players ever that he didn't go in the first round of the draft.
Right, right. He was lighting up the WAC back in the day for Hawaii. All right, let's get to acknowledge me. The magnificent Gladstone. This might be the greatest, most hyperbolic, absurd introduction for a rookie at his opening press conference in the history of the league. Picture Travis Hunter sitting in the middle of the table with Liam Cohen on one side and the magnificent Gladstone, James Gladstone, the Jags GM, on the other side. And this is Gladstone introducing Travis Hunter to the Jacksonville media.
You know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar. And really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible.
What the hell are you talking about?
Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player. But he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him. From the football field to the city to the game of football itself, Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
Had you heard that? Had you heard? Oh, yeah, sorry, the applause.
I heard it, but you get a little morsel every other time you hear it.
Rewatching The Sopranos. Yeah,
I didn't realize he'd had that canned line in there. The Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting.
We've been hunting. Yeah.
That's honestly, as ridiculous as that statement was, in how much of a statement they made and how much they've accomplished.
Yeah.
I mean, this is supposed to be something nice about Travis Hunter, which somehow turned into as an organization, this is the statement we're making. Dude, you haven't done a damn thing yet.
Yes.
I said, you're running the risk of making me dislike Travis Hunter, and I love Travis Hunter.
Yep.
Because you are, but just know this. Mm-hmm. He rehearsed that in time that he could have spent doing other things. He rehearsed that for at least a good 2 hours.
Oh, yes.
Because he wasn't working off of notes there. And no. I wondered at first if maybe he was speaking extemporaneously, but then he had that canned line at the end.
Yep. We're on the same page.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I just have to acknowledge that for how absurd it was. Like, it was that was some ridiculousness right there.
Now, this is the thing.
Yeah.
You have to prepare yourself for this. The vast majority of times, people like this go down in flames. But sometimes they succeed.
I know.
And they remain insufferable and successful. You have to prepare yourself for it. Don't underestimate him, Sean.
No, I know.
He might end up having that dual ability to be super, super, super annoying, but also incredibly successful.
All right. I'm going to acknowledge Tyler Booker, Dallas Cowboy. Always hurts to acknowledge a Dallas Cowboy. We'd heard the stories of some of the things that he said coming out of the combine interviews, like the press conferences, like to steal the will to live and the love of the game from others. But this was fun to get to hear him talk about it. This is on the Bleacher Report draft broadcast, the one that CJ was on last year with Micah Parsons. Micah was on it again this year. So this is Micah Parsons getting to hear his new teammate, Tyler Booker, talk ball.
You had one of my favorite quotes of the entire draft process. You said, quote, "I make guys not love football anymore." What does it feel like to see the love of football leave someone's eyes?
It feels great, you know. Football is a child's game. So like people wake up, be like, man, I can't wait to play this football game today. They listen to hype music. They take all the pre workout. They get so excited to play football until they come across Tyler Booker. And then when I'm going after you, quarter after quarter, play after play, series after series, and I start to see that love leave their eyes. Like that's what makes me love the game. Like I just really love.
Oh my God. I like that talk.
You just got me right. He got me ready to go.
I'm going to play right now.
Let's go. All right, so that was Micah Parsons screaming right there. Seth, I have to ask you this. If you were an 8-year vet on the defensive line for the team that was playing the Cowboys in week one, you know you're lining up over the top of Tyler Booker, and you've heard these quotes about him trying to steal your love of the game. Is this a quote that's making its rounds with veteran defensive linemen at all
now? I think like Dexter Lawrence in particular, somebody like
guys
that.
Guys in the NFC East especially.
You're going to steal my love?
Right.
You're going to steal my love,
dude,
Tyler Booker?
Everybody on the Eagles defensive line? On the Eagles defensive line.
It's a great soundbite, but man, you're still a rookie too. It made me hate Tyler Booker a little bit.
I
love Tyler Booker and I wanted him. Yeah. Oh, you're going to steal my love.
Yep.
You big fat glazy-eyed punk in the fourth quarter. After you beat him for 3 sacks. You're going to steal my love, are you?
I love it.
Are we loving this?
I
at some point, I'm loving it, that that jingle. Is that McDonald's?
That was McDonald's, yeah. That was
McDonald's, yeah. Dexter Lawrence is going to be singing the I'm loving it in the fourth quarter if he tags Tyler Booker for a couple sacks.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so there you go. I have a little FOMO over not getting Tyler Booker, but I had to get Seth's take on that. All right.
It's funny, though, too, because offensive linemen are the ones whose eyes usually get glazed over in the fourth quarter because they're tired and their blood sugar's getting low, and if it's not going well for them, like,
something to watch.
I could have gone to grad school instead of this. Nerds.
Nerds. Last one from the draft, Max Hairston. If you don't know who Max Hairston is, he's a defensive back from Kentucky who ended up going to the Bills with the 30th overall pick. If you watch the draft, I know I watch it on ESPN. I don't know if they carried the same feed for the NFL Network, but the guys that were there in the green room, you know, they get drafted and they kind of walk through all the other prospects there. Max Hairston handled not getting picked for the entire night better than anybody I've ever seen. He was dapping and hugging everybody who walked up to go take their flowers from Commissioner Goodell. Here was Max Hairston about how excited he was to congratulate all the other draft prospects.
How long was your night waiting in the green room? It's got to be tough. Great players have to wait until 27, 28, 29. I mean, you're watching everybody, hugging everybody, leaving. But what was the mindset like?
Honestly, whatever is meant to happen is going to happen. And I just stayed positive, stayed happy, congratulated all of my brothers that got their names called before me. And I was just so excited to that. And the fact that I got to hear my name as well, I don't care how late it is. It could be 3 a.m. I'll wait to hear my name. And I'm just ecstatic to be at Buffalo Bills. I feel like this is the right place for me.
I like that. I like this guy. I liked him that night, Seth, watching him. Like, this is the most enthusiastic Walmart greeter I've ever seen in my life, Max Hairston.
This is 2 years in a row now where the Bills' first pick has been a very likable sound.
That's FOMO, yeah.
Keon Coleman last year was incredibly likable and entertaining.
Lucky. Oh, my God.
And he was another guy that had slipped out of the first round. That's right. Taken, what, second pick in the second round?
Early second round, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, always, he became a star in just how well he handled all of that.
Man, Max Hairston. Max Hairston. They'll see him this year, the Texans will. Max Hairston, I like you. I hope Jaden Higgins goes for 7 catches for $160 against you, but I like you. All right, we got to get to this one, and we'll dig deeper into this next one here a little later in the show. Jordan Hudson. Is Jordan Hudson, who's that? Is that a 6th-round pick? Nope. That's Bill Belichick's girlfriend's name, and she's got him on a string, man. CBS Sunday Morning did about an 8-minute piece on Bill Belichick yesterday morning that is essentially an infomercial as to why he's probably not coaching in the NFL anymore. He's coaching at North Carolina. We'll have
Before we play the audio, showed multiple instances of her during this interview kind of approaching Belichick to tell him things and what have you. And apparently there are multiple times that she had stepped in, like you're about to hear.
Yeah.
So they claim they wouldn't have included this if it hadn't happened multiple times.
Right, right. So here was Belichick. And at the end, you're going to hear him get asked about how the two of them met, which was a big point of contention.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that that's the...
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on, though Hudson has recently posted about it on Instagram.
Okay, so that's...
Well, it's important to point out, she's off camera.
Yes.
She's not part of the interview.
Yes.
She's sitting at a desk as like the coordinator. So she's off camera. We're not talking about this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they show... They ask him about the social media posts, and they have the posts of him holding her up like an airplane on the beach.
Like the Titanic pose, but she's up on his feet. Like he's laying on his
back. Like you do with kids.
Yeah.
And it was news to Belichick that those photos were on social media.
I'm not on there very much. We'll have the full audio a little later in the show. It was awful.
It's a really cringy
8 minutes, man. Like they talk about it. The reason he did it, he's got a book coming out.
Yeah.
Called The Art of Winning. And we'll play some of the audio from it later in the show. Hey, one last acknowledgement here real quick. I just thought this was funny. This audio came across, or video came across my timeline last night. Ben Affleck did an interview where he was asked about a viral clip where he's out with his son, maybe at a sporting goods show or store. His son is looking at a $6,000 pair of sneakers that he wants to buy.
We were talking in the makeup room before the show about this clip that went viral of you with your son. And he was obsessed with this. Looking at these sneakers, which were an absurdly high price, and he wanted them. And you had the best line, which I plan to use, which is, I'm rich, you're not.
I was like, this nigga was $6,000. What are you talking about? What are you going to do, mow lawns? Like, you got $6,000? Right. He's like, we have the money. I was like, I have the money.
You're broke.
You got, you love your kids. You want to give them everything and do everything for them. But I think you definitely do them a disservice by, like, not connecting. You want something meaningful that you want.
Yeah.
You have to work.
So that's that was either a Shaq or a Barkley back in the day, too. One of the, I think it was Shaq. So we ain't Shaq. Rich, I'm rich. Yeah. We ain't rich, I'm rich.
Yeah. That's good parenting, man. That's just going to hand you a $6,000 pair of shoes. You got to go earn it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. Good job, Ben Affleck. Hasn't always been the smoothest of roads for you. I'm going to give you your props today and your acknowledgement. So there you go.
You know, my dad, who vacillated between being pretty well off and dead broke at various times in his life, he got rich, I'd say, three times. I would say he was broke five times, rich three times.
Okay.
And
even
when he was rich, he drove like a used Ford Ranger and everything. He was he was very much trying to instill that, like, you don't have to spend that money. Like, he didn't blow it by spending it. He blew it by bad decisions in his life.
Right.
But he was like, he was very good at making the money, just not that much in, like, the ensuing investment. But he just never drove. He was never living, you know, like a fancy lifestyle.
Right. Right. And when he had the money, he was not buying you and your brother $6,000 pairs of shoes.
God no. He bought me a pig once to use as a. To raise, so I could learn. Like, I'd have to, you know, I had to pay him for the feed and everything. And he loaned me the money for the pig.
Okay.
And then after I sold it, I got the profit after the expenses.
Did you? What was his APR on the loan for the pig to you?
He actually is interest free.
Oh, but really?
He very much pointed that out. That was his gift. The gift no basically so was you, it was no interest.
So
yeah.
You learned about interest. Okay. Yeah. See, that's good. I wish I had that lesson early, Dad. If you're listening, where was that lesson for me? Yeah,
I played the futures market behind his back and ended up making bank on it and told him about
money.
It. I bought pork bellies, because I knew it was going to tank. Yeah.
Yep. all right, this is the last one we're going to do for months and months, and we're doing this very tongue-in-cheek. Mock draft injection time. The 2026 mocks are out, Seth. The mock draft for 2026 is out. The funny thing about this is you start to get a feel for where the people think the Texans are going to finish next year as to where they're picking. So we'll do that. Our one last one, and then the mock draft injection gets retired till next February. We'll do that coming up next.